Shall we go? Okay. I see the doors closing. That means it's time to get started. So first of all, thanks everyone for coming to this session. I'm Unni Ravindranathan, and I'm a program manager on Visual Studio. My team is responsible for the tools that you might have used in Visual Studio over the past many years for building apps for Windows of all kinds. My team builds things like the visual design surfaces, project templates, the ability to deploy apps to devices, debugging, and everything in between. So I'm really excited to show you some of the things that we are working on in sort of a preview of what we're working on, of some of the tools that we are building for Visual Studio 15. So the agenda for today, it's kind of, I'm trying to do two different topics, so it's going to be, depending upon where your interest is. I'm going to actually start by showing some of the tools that we have in Visual Studio 15 that will help you be more productive building apps for Windows. And in particular, I'm going to focus on XAML apps today, but I'm going to show some of the other things along the way as well. And during the second half of this conversation, I'm going to show you some of the tools that we are building to help you take your desktop apps, the apps that, what we call Project Centennial. I'm going to show you some of the tools that we are building in Visual Studio to help you package these applications and take them to the Windows Store. But more important than packaging, we feel once you get to the point of like submitting to the App Store, you want to sort of keep improving them. So I'm going to show you the tools that you can use to sort of iterate, like how do you debug, how do you sort of like, set a breakpoint, how do you sort of debug an app in the context of Project Centennial. Along the way, I'll be sure to highlight some of the improvements that we are making to the runtimes themselves, like WPF, to help you, bring these apps to Windows, and hopefully these apps work great on Windows 10. I'm just curious, how many of you have built a .NET desktop app? OK, great. So fantastic. Not surprising. So what is a desktop app? I mean, I just wanted to set the context of this session. I'm not trying to define like anything here per se. The world is a little bit more complicated now because you could have a desktop app that you build as a Windows Universal app that runs on all of our devices. That could be a PC, it could be running on a PC or a phone or an Xbox or HoloLens. It's built with our Windows 10 application model, and it's distributed as an Apex. It's packaged and distributed as an Apex via the store, or you could sideload the app onto the PC as well. So that's Universal Windows apps, and there have been many talks before this that cover this. So I'm not going to go into much in that space, but the tools I'm going to show you are kind of applicable there as well. Our vision is to build tools that can sort of add value to both of these classes of apps. So that's a good thing. No matter what you're doing, you're going to build tools and keep innovating to help you be more productive in building these applications. What I'm going to focus today is classic desktop apps. And these are apps that have been running on Windows since, probably before I was born, but maybe not as much. But these are sort of apps that are built using the desktop .NET framework. Like you could build them using WPF, WinForms, things like that. Even VB6, that's fine. Or these are Win32 apps that you would build using C++, MFC, and so on and so forth. Historically, you would sort of install these using the Microsoft installer technologies, and these apps are capable of running all the way down to Windows 7, Windows XP, and beyond. With Project Centennial, we are doing work to help take some of these apps, and there are some fantastic Win32 applications out there today, to allow you to package them and take them to the Windows Store. We are calling it the Desktop to UWP Converter Bridge. And I'm going to show you what we are doing in Visual Studio to help the scenario and hopefully alleviate some of the pain that you might have in debugging and deploying these apps as well. Oops. Oh, that's too quick. But before I show you demos, and most of my session today is just going to focus on demos of various tools in Visual Studio, In Visual Studio 15, and by the way, this is really early. We are like just a few months into starting on this product. We are trying to build tools for pretty much everyone out there. You could be a .NET developer, a C++ developer, or even like a cross-platform mobile developer. It's fine. We are going to focus on building the right tools that help you be more productive. A standard disclaimer that some of the things I'm going to show today are likely going to change. Actually, most definitely will change by the time we are done. But it should give you an idea of the kinds of things that we are building. And more importantly, what I'm looking for is for us to have the conversation where you can give us feedback on whether what we're doing is right, is it going to help you build great apps, what's missing, and so on and so forth. Many of the tools that we are building today are directly influenced by the feedback that we have heard over the past many years, unfortunately, because there's always something important. But hopefully, the tools that we have today are actually a step in the right direction. And then the final thing is, not everything I'm going to show today is going to be available to you to try. Some of these will be available in our upcoming flights of Visual Studio, and some of them actually need Windows changes as well. So they will become available to you over the course of time. I'm not going to touch on a couple of topics specifically because they were dedicated sessions that talked about these. So for example, there was a session on Wednesday that talked about some of the top reasons you want to move to Visual Studio if you're a C++ developer. Things like the work we are doing to be more standards compliant, work we are doing to sort of improve our language service. Our C# language service is fantastic, but there's a lot of work we can do to make our C++ language service good as well. Things like refactoring, performance in looking up symbols, things like that. So we're doing work there. I'm not going to touch on this just because there was a session that covered it already. And then second, the other thing is the debugging part of Visual Studio is sort of our crown jewel. It's like it's fantastic and adds tremendous amount of value. But we want to keep pushing forward here. So things like the ability to better handle exceptions. If you were to ever catch an exception, a generic exception, it's super painful because your code will throw exceptions. The framework will throw exceptions. How do you sort of focus on debugging your code versus things that you can't really change as much? We are doing work to be able to filter it down to the module from where the exception originated, so you don't have to worry about debugging someone else's code. You can focus on like improving your code and debugging through it. We also want to make improvements to the UX itself. We don't like modal dialogues. We want things to be smooth in terms of how you deal with exceptions and things like that. So there were sessions dedicated to this, and I'm not going to go deep into covering this. So with that said, let's get started. So for the first part, I'm going to focus on some of the tools we are building for XAML developers and a few other things as well. And for the second part, we'll look at the story to take your Win32 applications to the Windows Store. With that said, let's switch over to demos. Oh, sorry, my PC has gone to sleep. Okay, in Visual Studio 15, and a preview of Visual Studio 15, I've loaded a WPF project, and I'm going to use this project throughout my demos to sort of take this project all the way to the Windows Store. So let's get started by hitting F5 and seeing some of the capabilities in Visual Studio. The moment I build and run this application, the very first thing you will notice that comes up in the context of the running application is this toolbar over here. This is what we call our in-app UI debugging toolbar. Though hopefully you don't have to come up with a shorter name than that, but it should be transparent to you. This toolbar is actually super useful because it's designed to help you diagnose UI issues in your running application. Those are some of the harder things for people to usually figure out, and we wanted to sort of show you some of the tools that we are building in this space to help you build great apps. This toolbar has a few pieces to it. The very first option here is a quick way to go back to Visual Studio so you can do things in Visual Studio, like inspect variables, make code changes, and things like that. So let's quickly click this button. And like you'd expect, you switch back to Visual Studio, and you are sort of taken into the live visual tree, which we'll talk about in a second. But that's a quick way to switch back to Visual Studio. The second tool is designed to help you select elements in the application so you can inspect properties of those elements and make changes to them. Let's go ahead and select this tool. And as you move the tool over your running application, you can select a number of different elements. And as soon as you click it, you can start inspecting properties on it and start making tweaks to it so you can make your app look good. And the third button, which is to be used in conjunction with the second one, is our sort of first stab at helping you diagnose layout issues in your application. Where is an extra padding set? Where is an extra margin set? We want you to sort of help you diagnose these quickly and get to the root cause. For the purpose of the demo, I'm not going to focus on this tool as much, and I'm going to stay inside Visual Studio for most of the time. The other thing to note here is let's go back to Visual Studio. If you were ever annoyed with that toolbar getting in your way, you can turn it off by using this button. And then when I go back to my running application, the toolbar is gone. But I find it really useful, and I'm going to keep it around. So let's go back and start making some changes to the application. So I'm seeing some issues that I want to go fix. The first thing I want to fix is I have a username written on the top of my application, and that could have a slightly larger font size. Now, in an older version of Visual Studio, what I would need to do is stop debugging, go back to the text editor, try to find XAML, try to find all the places where this potentially could be used, and then start making changes. We think that's really counterproductive because it takes sometimes for large applications a ton of time to rebuild and restart and make all those changes. So we wanted to bring a much more fluid experience to Visual Studio 15. So let me go ahead and select the element that I want to inspect. So I've clicked here, and I'm going to switch back to the live visual tree. The live visual tree is a visual representation of all of the elements in your application as the application is running. It is live in terms of the fact that as you're making changes to the application, as you're navigating across different parts of the UI, the tree is kept up to date in real time, and you never have to ever press refresh to get a new state. So it just stays behind the scenes and refreshes by itself. The live visual tree is designed to be used in conjunction with the live property explorer, which is, like the name indicates, properties for the element that you just selected. Again, it is live in terms of the fact that whenever you make a change, you don't have to ever restart or refresh. It just keeps up with you as you're making these changes and helps you inspect issues specific to UI in your application. It's more than UI, as we'll see in a second, but for now, we'll focus on UI issues. So let me go ahead and select the text block that I want to manipulate. I'm not really changing anything. In Visual Studio, no matter where your XAML is coming from, we'll be able to find that location and take you right to the place in XAML where your element is defined. It doesn't have to be, it can be coming from a style, it can be coming from anywhere, it doesn't matter. As long as you have source code for that markup, we will take you to the location in your project with a single click. So as soon as I click that, Visual Studio brings up the XAML editor, and I'm not sure if the thing is visible back there. Yeah, it should be okay. It synchronizes to the exact location in your XAML that the particular element is coming from, provided you have the source code. And now you can start making inspections and tweaks to it. Now, how many of you have used edit and continue in C Sharp? I'm sure pretty much, it's actually a fantastic feature that lets you actually make tweaks to your code and see those changes applied to the application as you're going through the debugging cycle. We wanted to bring that to XAML as well, and that's what I'm going to show you first. So to do that, let me go ahead and make a change to the font size. Now keep in mind, I'm not stopping debugging. I'm going to keep the debugger. I'm going to keep the app. Throughout the demo, I'm going to keep the app running under the debugger, and I'm going to change the application pretty significantly underneath me. So here I have font size, and let's go ahead and change the font size. Let's make it 22. That's all I'm doing. I can type XAML in my code editor as I'm debugging. And as I switch back to the running application, the UI updates without me having to restart the debugging cycle and sort of go from there. So it makes it really efficient for me to, thank you. It makes it really efficient for me to sort of like make these changes to my XAML and preview them without ever having to restart the debugging cycle. Now that's a really simple change, and you might wonder, what else can you do with it? So let's go radically change this UI, all using XAML Edit and Continue. And I'm not going to stop the debugger ever. So let me go ahead and dog the application to the right-hand side so you guys can see a side-by-side comparison. Ideally, this feature is best used in dual monitor setup, where you have your application running on one monitor and Visual Studio on the other. But because we don't have that luxury, I'm just going to go ahead and dock it side-by-side. Now, what I want to do first is I want to take this map control over here and move it to the bottom of the application. So I just want to switch it over to the bottom. And let's go ahead and make those changes. To do so, just like we did before, the first step would be to go and know where this particular piece of markup is coming from. So I'm just going to use the selection tool, and I'm going to go click somewhere inside the map so I get some locality of reference. And I'm going to hit my favorite go to live visual tree. That's going to bring up the visual tree that essentially has the error message that's shown here selected, just because I don't have a map credential key right now. And I can start walking up the visual tree. As I walk up the visual tree, the first thing I'll notice is there is the map control itself. So that sounds interesting. I'll go and open it, and I will see that, okay, that makes sense. The map control is defined there. But I want to do more. I want to keep walking up the tree and actually find the location where the control itself is getting used so I can move things around. So let me go back up to this view and bring up the XAML. And that makes sense now. There is a user control or a custom control that are defined for hosting the map control, and I want to sort of move the thing around. So let's go ahead and do that, and let's really do that in a natural way, the way you would do it with using cut, copy, paste, and delete, and things like that. So I'm going to select this line, and I'm going to select this line, and I'm going to cut it, and I'm going to paste it right at the bottom. Now, of course, nothing is going to change because I haven't really changed anything to impact layout yet, and that's what I'm going to do next. Let's go ahead and delete the grid.row, and keep in mind I want to move the map control down, so I'm going to move the grid.row to the map control. And as I'm doing things, note that I'm getting full IntelliSense, and I'm able to make all these changes using my XAML editor and IntelliSense capabilities. We have also made an intentional choice to make the XAML editor like full screen, so you can get like the highest fidelity code editing experience, and you can see those changes in the running application as I'm making them. Let's go ahead and change the height. Instead of it being that proportion, let's go ahead and do that. I'll do the same thing again. I'm going to go back here and set height equals. And one thing to note is, I'm typing very naturally. I'm getting into these weird states, with invalid XAML and things like that. That's fine. You don't have to do anything special there. Just type naturally, and we'll keep up with you in updating your application. So let's go ahead and make it 0.4 star. And now the control has sort of moved to the bottom to show you essentially how powerful this is. But that's not what I really wanted. Now I've changed my mind. And I want to move the control from the bottom of the screen to the right. I wanted to show you a couple other things that you can do as well. Like I said, you get full IntelliSense. So the first thing you want to do is change the row definitions to column definitions because you want to change the stacking from horizontal to vertical. So let's go change it. And using Visual Studio XAML language service features, you can just naturally type. Note that we have updated the ending tag as soon as you did that. And I'm going to change the row definition to column definition. It's a weird state to be in because in a column definition collection, you can't really have a row definition, no problem. You can change it. And then finally, I'm going to change the height from height, I'm going to change it to width. So now the control has disappeared. That's intentional because I haven't yet set all layout properties. But I've successfully removed items from a collection and re-added a completely new collection and items to that collection as well, all using without ever stopping the debugging. And the final step, of course, what I have to do is to move the map control to the right. I need to change the row property from row to column. And as soon as I do that, my control moves to the right, again, all without ever having to restart my debugging cycle. So that's XAML Edit and Continue for you. Thank you. And I just wanted to actually emphasize one thing, which is when you stop debugging and then restart the application again, all the changes that you made are actually in your XAML, and they're going to get applied to the running application. So it's not like we're doing, you know, you essentially are making real changes to your source code, and hopefully under source control, so if something goes wrong, you can roll it back. All those changes are essentially now reapplied, and now that's part of your code base for you to deal with. So one more thing before we switch gears. What else can you change using XAML Edit and Continue? Let's go ahead and make two more changes. One is I have a data-bound UI here. In this case, it's coming from my models. And I want to go make changes to that as I'm doing things, as I'm sort of working with the application. So let me go ahead and select, again, using our familiar gesture of selection. Let me go open up the live visual tree. And over here, you will see that it shows all of the element that I just wanted to see. But what I want to show you is one useful feature of the Property Explorer, which is the ability to inspect data contexts. It's really hard if you're doing data bindings and things are changing in your data context. You don't really know why my binding is not working. We feel a tool like this could help you inspect issues and diagnose and fix those issues as well. So let me just, I misclicked. Let me just bring up, let me pin this so we can see a little better. And let's search for the data context property. As soon as I search, one of the properties that's shown here, and the reason why things are not expanding is that there's quite a bit of hits, so we don't want to expand them all. But you can see the data context and start inspecting the properties of the data context. In this case, you can see there are properties. And keep in mind, this is just a normal object. This has nothing to do with XAML. It's almost like a debugger watch window where you're able to see the data context and all of its properties that go with it. One of the properties here is selected week. And that's what's happening to sort of show up here, as you can sort of see from the values, and you can match things up. So you can do inspection of things like data context and other objects in this scenario as well. But what I really wanted to do was make a change to the binding. And to do so, let me go back and open up the XAML editor, get these windows out of the way. And in my XAML editor, I have a selected week data binding. Let me go and change that to selected date. And if things work, fingers crossed. Did I mistype it? Anyway, but you get the point. If I delete something, the binding goes away. And if I update the thing back again, it comes back. I just don't remember the name of the property that I was supposed to update to. But you can change data bindings this way as well. And finally, you can change things in styles and templates as well. So if I go and select a particular style or template, I can go make tweaks to it, and everything works there as well. So you can change pretty much anything in your XAML. Let's keep moving. The next capability that I wanted to show you in Visual Studio is, to do so, I'm just going to open up Blend, because to date, we have only built this in Blend, but we will bring it to Visual Studio as well. Are you guys familiar with Blend? So Blend sort of are just, yeah, some people are. Blends are a design-focused tool. It lets you do a lot of the mundane things that you could do in XAML. But we have a lot of specialized capabilities to do things like animations and states and things like that. The capability that I wanted to show you is Lightbulb. So in C Sharp, using our .NET compiler platform, also known as Roslyn, we let you write things like analyzers, and you know, we want to make it possible for you to extend the editing experience itself of C Sharp. We thought, why not do the same thing for XAML? And what we have done here as a first step is to bring the light bulb into the XAML editor as well. To see that in action, let me go and bring up the XAML editor and put the cursor somewhere in my editor. And immediately you will see a light bulb pop up with essentially one fix up, and we're going to build many more over time, that says I have namespaces that I'm not really using. So let me go ahead and remove those. And as soon as I do that, one of the namespaces, which was redundant, is now taken out of my text, and my XAML is much more cleaner. We want to do things like inserting namespaces and suggesting formatting options and things like that. But this is sort of our first step to let you, bring the power of the .NET compiler platform to XAML as well. So that's the light bulbs experience. And finally, one final thing I wanted to show is it's been a while since we have changed our XAML language service, about a year and a half or two. So in this iteration, we want to invest in making you a lot more productive in entering your XAML. And that's what I'm going to show here. So in this case, I'm going to get views. And as soon as, oops, sorry, that's what I meant. If I type footer and I hit enter, we will automatically insert the namespace for you, no matter where the type is coming from, just like C sharp. And we will sort of insert it into the top of the XAML file as well. So we're doing work to make it possible for you to sort of easily complete your XAML input and make you more productive there as well. And finally, Blend is actually going to see some new capabilities as well. For example, we're going to add search in the resource panel. That XAML was not valid. Let me just fix that up again. We're going to add search in the resource panel and things like that people have been asking us for a long time. We just haven't gotten around to that. So we are committed to making your XAML authoring and debugging features and make you a lot more productive in building any kind of .NET app or actually any kind of Win32 application. Now, let me actually switch back to Visual Studio. Let me get out of Blend. And let's quickly start debugging. Now, one of the things that Satya showed in his keynote yesterday was, as Microsoft, we are responsible for enabling you guys, our developers, to build universal apps. And by universal, it doesn't just mean apps that run on PCs, tablets, and phones. It means apps that are actually universally available for everyone. And by everyone, people with disabilities, for example. We are doing work, a significant amount of work in Visual Studio VNext, Visual Studio 15, to build tools that will help you build apps that are accessible. Let me show you a couple of those. The first tool is, as soon as I bring up visual debugging, and I go back to, let me go and select something here that makes sense. Let's go and select this button. And let's bring up the Live Property Explorer. We are building a new, completely new category for accessibility that lets you inspect accessibility-related properties and essentially quickly address them so your apps are fully accessible. So that should help you like inspect those kinds of issues and have suggested fix-ups so you can quickly make your apps accessible. But more importantly, we're going to work with Windows to improve the narrator experience. So that also helps. And to do that, let me quickly switch back to slides because I don't want to bring up narrator on my desktop here. And show you a quick 30-second video. So as the video is going along, just because I wanted to speak along with the video, I just recorded it in a little bit in advance. So what's happening here is we have in Visual Studio 15, we have a new way of debugging called Debug App for Accessibility. And what's going to happen here is as soon as the app comes up, we're going to launch Narrator for you behind the scenes, so that's a little bit more productive for you. And then finally, let's wait for a second, the app's going to get blanked out. And that's intentional, because we want you to sort of experience the application just like a person with visual disabilities would experience. And you can sort of like then tab through the application, work through, try to, for example, complete a transaction in this application. And it's almost going to be impossible. So think about the user who can't do it. And the tools that we are building should help you diagnose these issues and fix them up as well. One thing to call about this mode, we're going to work with Windows in such a way that only the app that you're debugging will essentially be blanked out. And your narrator will only be reading that app so that when you switch back to Visual Studio and try to fix up the problem, narrator is now not reading Visual Studio itself. So we're going to make it such that it's really productive for you to sort of like just look at the app that you're debugging and make changes to it. So let's switch gears a little bit. But before that, let me quickly recap. I think I'm doing well on time. Just to summarize, using XAML Edit and Continue, you can make changes to your XAML and see those changes happening in the running application without ever having to restart the debugging cycle. Oops. XAML IntelliSense, we are just starting to start adding new capabilities, things like namespace completions, Roslyn, Lightbulb, and so on and so forth. And we are starting to make Blend a better product as well. Narrator developer mode, this is what I just showed you, where Narrator sort of helps you visualize your app as a person with visual disabilities would, and they can sort of go inspect and fix those, and you as a developer can go inspect and fix those issues as well. And finally, the UI debugging and authoring tools as well, where we are making it much more easy for you to inspect automation-related, accessibility-related properties. So now let's switch gears to talk about taking your Win32 applications to the Windows Store. How many of you have heard of the story from earlier this week where you could potentially do this? And I'm just curious to hear how many of you are interested in that. Okay. Wow, that's actually pretty phenomenal. So that's a good bit of audience. So today I'm going to focus on the last two bullet points here. But let me just quickly walk over the story. We want you to make it possible for you to take your existing Win32 applications, and by that we really mean any kind of Win32 application, a .NET, C++, it doesn't really matter. We want to make it possible for you to package this as an Apex package and either submit it to the Windows Store, or if you're an enterprise customer, sideload and distribute it by the enterprise as well. The thing to note here is the Win32 code, in this case, we will be successful only if we made you do pretty much nothing except repackage. And so, like, really, your application is going to be running just as it is on the desktop. It's running in full trust. It'll have access to all of the UWP functionality, so if you wanted to light up something, you can do that as well. But the last two bullet points is where I'm going to focus my talk on, which is how do you make it such that you have the same code base and you can sort of still deliver an app to the Windows Store, and maybe if you wanted to sort of maintain an app for Windows 7 using MSI technologies, that's fine as well. How do you sort of like think about it that way? And then more importantly, how do you think about iterating on such solutions that contain both desktop app code, the code that you already have in place, and the code that you may want to write in the future as well. So let's go take a look at how this workflow looks like with a demo. Oops, sorry, that's not what I meant. Okay, so let me stop debugging. And what I'm going to now do is I've taken my Win32 application, and by the way, this particular version of Visual Studio does not have setup projects enabled, but that last project over there is a Visual Studio setup project. So if I build a solution in VS, I am going to get an MSI out of this one. I'm just not going to do it here because that's not as exciting, but this is really getting me an MSI. Now, what do I do with that MSI? So that's the first step of the workflow. Like, you have to do this one-time conversion process of your MSI into an Apex package. And we will provide you with the right tools in the SDK and Visual Studio to do so. Because we are a little early in the process, you have to do a couple of manual steps today, but super trivial. Let me just quickly walk you through them. So let me log on to my VM. And while it's coming up, thing to note here is you don't really need a VM. I just kept it because I could not make everything work on the same build of Windows, but you shouldn't really, it's an optional thing for you to do so. So I'm going to bring up PowerShell. And I'm going to run as an administrator. Wait for a second. And here is what I have today. I have a folder that contains the MSI installer that I built for the project using what I showed you in Visual Studio. And I've just copied the installer to this VM just to save us some time. And now I have a PowerShell script on which I'm going to sort of convert this into an Apex package as we speak. So let me go ahead and create a new folder and call it Apex Layout. And let's go ahead and run the command that converts from an MSI into an Apex. All you have to do is run this PowerShell, and we will do everything necessary to create you that first Apex package to get started. Now, the command itself, really the two interesting parts from your perspective is there is an input that you specify, which is an MSI, and an output you specify, which is your Apex package root, which is where the package ends up getting created. So let's go ahead and copy this and run it in PowerShell. It's going to take about, you know, 5 to 10 seconds, if fingers crossed, if everything goes well. And what it's really doing behind the scenes is it's running, it's literally like running your MSI and listening for file system changes and registry changes. So they all get, you know, logged and registered, so we can virtualize that out from you. One of the value propositions with the ability to take Win32 apps to the store is we want to make it possible so that your users, when they download those apps, their machines don't get, you know, littered all over the place with custom components from different MSIs. We want to sort of like virtualize that entire system, and that's what this tool is really doing. That's pretty much it. 10 seconds later, I have an Apex package, and if I now go back to my folder and take a look, it has all of the files that I just sequenced. Really, there is three things here. There is a virtualized file system, which contains, keep in mind that I'm writing files like in a number of different places. It contains all of those. Like if I go to program files, here is all the DLLs that my project has. And it does create a couple of extra artifacts. Like it creates a manifest, and it creates a virtualized registry file as well. So that's all it does. Now all I need to do is copy this back to my dev box, and I'm ready to start like iterating on it and making changes. So that's what I'm going to show you now. So let's get out of that VM. And now what I've done is I've copied the same package. In the interest of time, I just copied it manually here. And now I'm going to start making, you know, iterations and making this app, you know, even light up more functionality in the context of a UWP. So the first thing that you need to do is in Visual Studio, we are adding a new project system called Desktop to UWP Project. The name is temporary and it'll change. So let's go ahead and add one of those. All it is a way for you to sort of like get this sort of like place in Visual Studio where you can make iterations to your application. To test the application that I just built, I need to do two things. One is I need to set this project as startup so I can hit F5 and I can start debugging it. And the other thing I need to do is I need to go to its properties. And in properties, I do see what is like the root of the layout that I just copied down. I need to set it so that every time I hit F5, I'm deploying changes to that location and I'm making, you know, iterative improvements to my application. So let me go ahead and set the layout that we just created, which is over here. I'm going to just copy this path and set it here. And now Visual Studio is smart enough to know that there is an executable. By the way, your MSI or your app could have multiple entry points. Each of them ends up being a tile in the start menu. In this case, there is only one entry point, and I'm going to set that as my F5 entry point. And I'm just going to start debugging. So now what's going to happen is Visual Studio is going to register the package that you just created, and it's going to activate the application for debugging as we go. So here we go. And as you can see it, the application is now coming up. And as this tile indicates over here, it's running as a UWP app, all built from your Win32 code base with just a couple of single clicks, and now fully debuggable and authorable inside Visual Studio. Now you might wonder, that's great, but now I want to add some code that lets me do some UWP-specific things. So for example, you might want to add code for calling an API that updates a tile. When you add such code, the thing to keep in mind is that if you wanted to make this app also run on a Windows 7 machine, that API does not exist on Windows 7. So you have to take some precautions when you write the code. So let's take a quick look at that. The first thing you would do is to create a new configuration so you can conditionally compile your code for Windows 7 or Windows 10. Let me just quickly add a debug configuration. I'm just going to copy my settings from my existing configuration. So let's call it desktop UWP debug. So all I've done here is created a conditional compilation, just set it up so that I can conditionally compile my code for Windows 10 or Windows 7. And then the other thing to do here is, as soon as I do that, I need to set up the, because you could have packages that you're building for debug and release, You need to do this for every configuration. You need to say, where is my actual test package located at? So in this case, I'm going to use the same package. I'm not going to bother about changing anything. So let me go set that. And let me change, set the tile up again. That's all I need to do. And on top of that, I have to do one more thing, which is I need to say, whenever I'm hitting F5, please rebuild all of my dependencies so that as I'm making code changes, I can test those changes in the context of the application. So a simple way of doing that in Visual Studio is to add a couple of project dependencies for both of the projects that I have. And I'm going to hit F5. And just to show that this is going to hit the breakpoint, let me go and set a it's too late. Let me just, I'll show that again. I'll get to that again. But you can set a breakpoint, and now the application will sort of like be debuggable under Visual Studio. Now comes the interesting part of adding code that is specific to UWP. So to do so, and we're gonna do a bunch of work here to make this even more smoother. The first thing you need to do is add a reference to the metadata file that contains all of the Windows 10 APIs that you can potentially call. So I'm just going to go to add reference for now, and I'm going to add a reference to the Windows WinMD file. Think of WinMD as just a DLL that contains like all of the API signatures, and hit OK. Keep in mind that I've added that to my desktop app project, and I'm going to go to my code. And I'm going to add just a couple pieces of lines of code to show you a tile. So let me go back to some sample code here. And let me add the code here. And then resolve a couple of those namespaces. That's all I have to do. Let me also call the function that I just added. This is an insanely simple example, but hopefully, not doing the right thing here. Using, there we go. That should take care of that. And now everything is resolved. Let me go hit F5. Keep in mind that I've done nothing but added some code and hit F5. And if things work as expected, fingers crossed. Do it one more time. There you go. The debugger should, I missed one point. So let me stop that one more time. Now, the thing to note here is when you talk about complex Win32 applications, it's often very hard for us to predict how your application is actually going to get packaged at the very end. You could take a DLL from here, copy to another location, and so on and so forth. So Visual Studio needs some hints to help us know where exactly do you intend the DLL to go. And to do so, we have, let me go back to the Solution Explorer, a mapping file that basically all it does is maps from the project output to the location in the package where you intended the DLL to go. That's all you need to update. Let me just copy a sample example here. And I'll explain what it's doing. It's basically suggesting to Visual Studio that, and I'm using hard-coded paths here, you hopefully should not do that, just copy a particular DLL from this location into a place inside the package where I intended the DLL to actually go to. So let me quickly change this to desktop UWP debug, because that's where I'm building my current configuration to. And that's pretty much it, hopefully. So let's hit F5. That didn't do anything. Let's hit F5. Oh, what happened there? Did I make a mistake? Somehow it's early bits. It'll get worked out by the time you're done. I think the process is still running. Let me just quickly close VS and restart it. No, it's good, it's good. I think the process is still running. It didn't shut down cleanly. But you get the point. Like, as soon as I hit F5, I should be able to deploy the change, set the breakpoint, and I should be able to step through the code. So that what I've essentially done is pushed a change to the running application package and debugged it successfully through Visual Studio. Let me quickly switch back to my slides, just to recap, because it's probably easier to just take a look at the bigger picture. So what the workflow, what I just showed you, is you essentially have a project in Visual Studio that has a dependency to another project, in this case a DLL. You're packaging, this is your current story today, you're building that into an EXE and a DLL, and you're then packaging that into an MSI. Using the converter, we converted that into an Apex package. And at this point, if you think your app is good enough, that's fine. You can just package it using the SDK and send the resulting app to the store, no problem. But more likely than not, you do want to sort of light up additional functionality for your application. So what you need to do is you need to add a new project so that we can stitch the whole thing together. That project has a reference to both the library and the application, one or the other, it's up to you. And the project has a list of files that map from the original project into the package itself. You could have any number of flavors of this, and you can sort of like, from that perspective, get going by packaging it up to the store. So I hope this picture helps clarify a little bit of the kinds of things I was trying to do there. Okay, let me actually talk, since we have 5 more minutes, let me actually quickly show you some of the improvements that we are making in WPF to help make some of these apps, like especially apps that you're sending to the store, you know, work better on Windows 10. Now, because I only have a single PC here, I'm going to have to do this as one video because I don't have a PC with the issues. So here's an example of an app that's running on Windows 10 RTM without any changes to WPF. So the first thing to note here is when the app, and it's the exact same app, by the way, no code changes. The first thing to note here is as I'm going to a tab and I'm putting my cursor in Notes and switching back and forth, I'm not really seeing the keyboard come up, and I'm not really seeing the stylus come up either. We have done work in WPF in .NET 4.6.2, which should be available with the next update to Windows, to make this problem go away without you having to write a single line of code. It should just work. So here's the example of the exact same app that runs on a pretty recent build of Windows. And as you note here, as soon as I go to the application, I go into the Notes with the stylus. I automatically get the ability to ink. I switch back, and I'm coming back using touch. I do get the ability to sort of like bring up the soft keyboard as well. So you've done work to improve the touch experience of WPF itself, because we realize that you can't just take these apps and put them to the store. They need to work well with other UWPs today, and we need to make .NET that much more better to handle these scenarios. One more example. We're doing work to improve, and this is not really clear because of the monitor, so I didn't even try. We're doing work to improve how you handle per monitor DPI. So if you have two different monitors, one with high DPI setting and one with low DPI, as you move apps across monitors, you will see the picture on the right, though it's not very clear on the projector, is much more crisper, and the picture on the left is what we'd have gotten in .NET 4.6.1. So we're doing work to make, without you actually having to do much at all you have to do is add a single line of code in your manifest, recompile, and then you will sort of automatically get new behavior. We can't do this automatically for you, because in that case, certain kinds of apps do break, and we don't want to do that. So that's pretty much everything I had today. But like I said, you know, now it's already Friday, but some of these sessions touched on, you know, how the UWP story works, how do you do better debugging in Visual Studio. So like I said, there is something for everyone, and we really hope, like, you know, you give us the feedback to so that we can improve the product over time. And that's pretty much all I have. I'm going to open up the floor for questions. I'd request that you come to the mic, and I'd be more than happy to take any questions that you might have. And to summarize, please do take the evaluation as well if you get a chance. I'm going to go back to the contact slide just in case you want to send an email or get in touch with me. But thank you. Yes, can you please use the mic, please?
Does the focus tracking work for it as a WPF desktop app before you convert it to an APEX?
So the question is, you're speaking on the mic, so I'll just say, yes, it does work. You don't have to be essentially running as an APEX, but you do need to be running on Windows 10 because it does use new Windows 10 APIs.
Thank you.
You always talk about .NET Win32. It works only for not managed code, the conversion.
The conversion works for any kind of code, including pure C++. You don't have to be .NET.
It can target only desktop or only LT and phone and so on?
No. By default, your Win32 application that has no .NET, if that's your scenario, that's fine. Those apps will only run on PCs.
Okay.
They are PC apps.
And can have access to a shared folder of the PC and network items like printers and so on?
Yes, you should be able to have access. There are a couple of things that you can't do. For example, you cannot write a driver and get it installed as a part of that.
Of course.
But yes, absolutely, you should be able to look at files and folders and things like that as
well. The only thing you have not told, availability of converter?
The next 2 to 3 months.
Thank you.
Hi. What about Windows .NET forums? Do Google have the auto keyboard and things like DPI event changing so we can keep track of, because we understand that especially Windows forums are more sensitive.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, absolutely, we realize that. But for now, the changes that we made are in WPF only.
What does for now mean?
We are looking for feedback. So if that's what that's what your scenario is, we'll definitely hear that.
This is not a question. Actually, it's a comment of my own. What kind of feedback are you waiting for? Pastor, for 15 years, all of the .NET, the vast majority was Windows forms. Would you expect us, the developers, to be sitting for 10 years? No. So there are a lot of Windows forms applications over there.
That's absolutely a good point.
Enterprise ones, not only games and, puzzles.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. That makes sense. Thank you. Any other questions?
So if I have a normal desktop app and I want to submit to the store, is there anything that the store does to ensure safety that my app isn't doing anything it shouldn't, maybe stealing credentials or using? Because basically, one of the tenets of the store is that I, as a user, am ensured that the app is not doing anything too bad because you can statically analyze it with the Win10 APIs.
Yeah.
But if you just let any desktop app in there, how can you have that same level of the same guarantee to the end user?
So I think of this as three scenarios, essentially. One is you're building for yourself, in which case it's your own app, and you can sideload it, and that just works. The second scenario is you're building an enterprise, and that, again, is under your control.
Yep.
For the public store, our current, to start with, we're going to make it such that it's only trusted partners that are sending apps to the store, so that as a customer, when you download these apps, you don't have to worry about something going wrong, because you're right that these are full trust applications and they can do pretty much anything.
So you're not just taking any random submission from the store?
Because of its full trust nature, we do want to sort of work with apps that essentially have a certain bit of reputation out there today,
mm-hmm.
and we want to sort of maintain that customer confidence promise as well. So it's sort of trying to balance between the two.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. But that's a policy decision, and we can sort of tweak it over time. But certainly, we're going to go that way to start with.
I have a follow-up question
on
the WinForms. Will the in-app toolbar basically selection pointer work for Windows Forms as well?
No, it's a WPF apps only thing. But it can actually, I should say, it's a XAML apps only thing. It's tied to the XAML technology today. And so it only works for WPF and UWP apps.
Okay.
Does the XAML edit and continue work with visual states and animations and storyboards?
I did not show that today because it doesn't work today, but by the time we are done, it should definitely work for those scenarios as well.
Cool.
Thank you.
Hi, so we currently sell like at Best Buy or box products so the user could be a Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 10. Now if we convert, we can sell through the Microsoft Store. But can the same build that we convert, can we still sell it on in a DVD?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I was trying to say. Like in my project, I essentially had two setup projects, one for the Apex part and one for the MSI part, using the same code base that I'm sharing across the two.
Okay.
So you should be able to, if you are smart about authoring the code in terms of not taking a dependency on an API that's only on Windows 10, you should be able to package the same code base as a MSI or an Apex and distribute it to both sets of customers.
So even a Windows 10 user that walks up to Best Buy and buys
it? We will never take back support for MSI from Windows. That's not going to happen.
No, can they use the AppX from a DVD, for example?
Sorry, I missed that question. Yeah, so we are doing work in Windows 10 so that you can double-click and install an AppX.
Okay.
So yes, the semantic equivalent of the DVD scenario does work for AppX as well.
So it doesn't have to be an enterprise side-loading?
No.
You can just double-click it and install.
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect, thanks.
There may be some limitation on the number of apps and things like that, but generally, that's again a policy decision that we are sort of refining. But yes, we do have the double-click scenario in mind to install the Apex without going through the store.
Yes, I have two questions. The first one is, does the converter work for apps that install drivers and services?
No.
Okay, then my second question isn't important.
That's primarily because one of the promises with that we want to deliver to our customers as a whole is we want to make sure that what you do is cleanly uninstallable and it doesn't introduce any, one app cannot impact another app. And that promise requires us to sort of make some trade-offs and things like that. Now that again could change over time, but today you cannot do that.
And I will ask my second question. Does the converter require an MSI-based installer, or is it just watching any file activity?
Technically, it doesn't need to, no.
Okay.
It can. It essentially just watches the files. Now, to start with, how much we automate using the workflow that I showed you, that's a good question. But no, there is nothing magic there. By the way, you don't even need to use the converter. You can basically take the Apex layout, that build it with a simple app, and then start editing it and changing it as well. So converter is completely optional in this process. And yes, there is no dependency on MSI. It just is a convenience feature to take an MSI and convert it in an Apex package. Thank you.
For WPF, are you doing any work to enhance the standard control set to have more of the sort of like modern look that a UWP app has? Because I noticed in your examples you're using my apps, which I use myself.
Yep.
But it would be nice if I do UWP, it looks very modern, all the controls, you get those things. But if you use WPF, it basically looks like a WinForm app by default unless you add a bunch of your own styling.
That's a good question. I mean, we are, to answer your question, no, we are not doing any work there. But we would love to sort of work with the community to sort of bring something into a .NET foundation as an open source project or something like that, that allows us to, evolve something with the community, but I don't think that's going to happen inside the platform.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
First of all, great session. Really enjoyed it. I had a question on Apex. Whether this Apex package contains all the DLLs which I had on my desktop, or when I'm now pushing it to the Windows Store, will all those DLLs would be automatically pushed for me, or I'll have to do it explicitly?
No, it's all, so the question is, if your MSI contains multiple DLLs, does the user have to know? No, it's all packaged together.
Okay.
Now, if you're in MSI world, your MSI can chain in other MSIs, but the sequencer, when you run it, should essentially do that as well, or you can do it manually as well. Mm-hmm. But the end user experience should be one app, one thing that they click on, and they get the app, and not necessarily five different things that you have to manually acquire.
All right.
So it should be one thing. Yes, your source could be coming from multiple places, but we want to make the Apex thing self-contained. Now, keep in mind that Windows is doing a number of other things as well, like downloadable content and things like that. Some of those might work at some point of time in the future, But for your simple scenario, you know, you should just like, you know, go with one package mm-hmm. that the user downloads that contains all the DLLs required for the app to work.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. You can't. You also, to specifically answer your question, you can't install shareable components this way. They are all essentially local to your application. But you can do it with one click. You don't have to do two different things to get those things down. Yes, sir.
As part of the migration process, in that separate project, do you have the ability to host XAML controls in like a regular HWind? Kind of like
you mean WinRT XAML controls?
Yeah, like with WPF, you can write a WPF DLL and then host the controls in an HWind. Can you do the same thing with the XAML? Like if, for a desktop
You cannot
Win32.
Mix the stacks when it comes to UI.
Okay.
So you can call many WinRT APIs, actually almost all WinRT APIs, but you cannot call the UI stack itself. So you can't say, you know, give me a new window and then put it inside my WPF app. You cannot do that.
Okay.
But you can call any WinRT API beyond the UIs, or most, many of the WinRT APIs beyond the UI stack.
Okay, and then I guess follow-up question. You showed putting the UWP code into the old project. Are there some easy APIs to call to kind of check, am I running Windows 10, do this code, otherwise do the fallback
code? Yeah, we tend to shy away from using version-specific checks, but you totally can do that, sure.
You have to, don't you, if you want to run on both?
If you're doing Win32 code, you really don't have an option. If you're running UWP code, there are other ways to check for light-up scenarios. Let's say you're writing an app for Windows 10 RTM, and then you want to add new APIs for Windows 10 Update 1, for the lack of a better term. You could choose to use light-up API checks to do so. And yes, but if you're writing Win32 code, you can do version checks as well.
But if you're running for Windows 7, not Windows 10.
Yes, you'll have to do version checks. And that works too.
Hello, how about optional features and prerequisites in installers?
That's a good question. So for example, here, I will tell you an answer, a simple example here. Let's say you depend on .NET Framework 2.0, right? Yeah. You cannot do that. Your app has to be sort of built for 4.6.1 or higher. So you can't install feature on demand things. But that said, I'll take that feedback back. Is there a specific component that you're looking at?
But I'm thinking about C++ redistributables.
Those okay. So we are doing work to make the C. Are you familiar with what framework packages are for UWP?
No, sorry.
So they are sort of like redistributables for C++ that you can install using Apex technology as well. So if you're a Win32 application customer, your app can depend on a framework package, which is another Apex, which has the C++ DLLs. And so you don't have to take them app local. You could do so, but you can also have, that's the only scenario where sharing is allowed here.
Okay.
So you just have to express a dependency on the version of VC that you want, and then your app can carry, we will download the right VC for you.
Okay.
And that's what I'm saying. It's really scenario specific. If you have anything in mind, we'd love to.
Or how about the questions or options that user usually chooses in the wizard?
I don't think you can opt into those, but I'll take that feedback back.
Okay.
Again, I would love to hear what specifically you want to opt into, because maybe it should be enabled by default, maybe not. So I'd love to hear.
No, but I mean, like, we ask questions usually in our installer in terms of like connecting to what servers, things like that. So
I see. So you want user interaction during installation?
Yeah.
And then do things based on user interaction.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's possible in this world.
Okay.
So, yeah, you'll have to give them all and then make code change. You'll need to do that stuff in your app itself as opposed to install time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So I know you can't do drivers. What are the limits of what you can do at install time? So you said, you know, one app can't affect another app, but can it put in hooks in the OS? Like, I have an app that puts itself in the send to menu.
Yes.
An app like, you know, 7-Zip puts itself in the context menu.
Yes. There'll be some integration points for all of those shell scenarios.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes. Again, I would love to. So my suggestion would be, please do send me an email, because we would love to hear specific things that you want to do. I will use an example here. We want to bring Office using this technology.
Mm-hmm.
And Office, without double clicking, doesn't make sense. Where you need to be able to launch Office with the right program when you double click. So yeah, that should work. But again, I want to make sure that I understand the concerns, scenarios clearly.
Well, the explicit scenario that I currently do is I add myself to the send to, a shortcut in the send to folder for the user, so that I have a program that processes any type of random file with all random extensions. So You can right-click any file. Yeah, I'll be in the send to menu.
That should be there.
Okay.
But I just want to make sure that let's go over all of very specifically using screenshots, and I'll make sure that we say yes or no to that. But I'm pretty sure at a high level, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
How about adding control panel applets? If an app is adding control panel applets, will that get transferred over?
I would like to say no, but can you, again, get in touch with me with your scenario and a couple of screenshots so I can better take a look at it?
OK.
I think I'm going to say no, but I would love to take a detailed look further.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. There's currently quite limited support for multi-touch in WPF. Do you know if there are any plans to enhance this?
From my perspective, multi-touch works, but there were a bunch of bugs and quality issues. We've done improvements, bug fixes, and things like that. But if there is a specific, my suggestion would be try 4.6.2. If 4.6.2 doesn't make your scenario better, please get in touch with your specific repro steps, and we can take a look. Are we adding multi-touch to controls by default? No, but we want to make it possible for you to build multi-touch applications.
Okay.
Now, it won't be as good as UWP apps, but I think it should certainly be to the point where you can do a significant number of things there.
Okay, thank you.
But I'd love to hear very specifically what's not working and then take a look at addressing those.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.